All right, welcome. Let's get started. I want to thank everybody for coming, obviously. That's number one. I want to thank Alyssa for being so involved in organizing the shiur last year, and now we're in our second year of the weekly woman shiur. And of course, as always, thank you to Shira Platnick and family for hosting the shiur. It's really wonderful, so thank you so much. On her behalf, I'll invite people to take a cookie. I know that we try this every year, and people get particularly careful about not eating just when they want to learn Torah.
But they're worth it.
Yes, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. Anyway, okay. So let's get started. Just one word about the series, which we hope to be a weekly thing throughout the year, and then we'll dive into today's shiur. What we did last year, and I think, you know, for the most part it worked, and I got some feedback. I know Alyssa did a little bit of a survey on the women's group, is we kind of alternated between either topics or even series, which were either contemporary or practical halacha. Sometimes we did one, but I tried to do sometimes two or even three together so we could really cover a topic. And then we alternated between halachic issues and more hashkafic or inspirational issues. And we always try to be substantive. There's always a source sheet. But obviously the goal is to help impact our lives, either on a practical level or on a more emotional, spiritual level. And I think that will be the pattern again this year. If there's particular topics that you're interested in, I can't promise that I'll do exactly what you asked me to do, but you're definitely invited always to make requests if there's a halachic topic or a hashkafic topic you'd like us to get to. But we do try to do either standalone shurim or series, and we try to alternate throughout the year. I think last year we ended up having about 30 shurim or something to that effect. We started with Shemitah in the beginning of Elul last year. This year we're starting a little bit later, so we're going to start with Rosh Hashanah, but Mirza Hashem will have another shiur before Yom Kippur. I don't know the calendar. I'm not sure it's realistic to have a shiur before Sukkot, but then after after Sukkot, we will resume. And other than my travel schedule, the regulars here know that I do have to travel to America periodically, so other than the travel schedule, Mirza Hashem, we look forward to having a weekly shiur, and certainly hope that you can all join us as much as possible. Today's shiur is a standalone shiur. It's about Rosh Hashanah, and I entitled it "Looking Back," so that we can look. Mrs. Simons, right here. Perfect. They saved it for you. It's a reward. I know that. I know, but that's a reward for coming a minute late.
Not dramatic back for my man.
A reward. I say. I didn't say a punishment. You are lucky enough to sit right here.
I am.
You're going to share a source sheet with a wonderful newcomer, so we're happy to have you. The topic of the shiur, I entitled it "Looking Back," so that we can look forward, and I mean that on two levels. Obviously, I think the more obvious level is that we're at the end of this year, so we're looking back as we're about to anticipate a new year in Rosh Hashanah. But what I also mean is more on a meta level, looking back on our life so that we can look forward, not just to last year. And I mean to say, I think that for many of us, we have become either jaded or worse, cynical about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and the tshuva process. After all, we've read this book before, we've seen this movie, and we know how it ends. Hopefully we'll have a meaningful period, hopefully a beautiful davening, we'll be inspired to make commitments. Then at some point during the year, and in some cases rather quickly, we see we're not necessarily standing up to the commitments that we wanted. We're not always having a better year or growing in this way or that way. That's a story for most of us. Life is hard. Religious life has its own challenges, health issues, all sorts of things. And therefore, it's possible that when you're younger, there's a certain more natural receptivity to growth and to change. You haven't had as many challenges yet. It's just the nature, for the most part, of life. And therefore, I think that a message that will really be resonant and hopefully impactful is one that has to be honest about confronting the challenges of, how shall we say, right? There's no one in the room who is in seminary this year. Right? We're not at that stage of life. Now, there may be people who listen on. We have somebody who teaches in seminary, but even she has her own challenges to go through that over and over again. It's easy to be the new student. It's harder to be the director every year. But that's really the issue that I mean when I say looking back, so looking forward. What insight can we glean, I hope, that can perhaps make this year's Yom HaNeraim and then therefore this coming year a perhaps even more meaningful, specifically at the stage of life that we find ourselves. So to introduce this challenge, I wanted to share with you two Gemaras. And this is right at the beginning of your source sheet. Again, for those who don't have a source sheet, please try to look on. And even either way, we always try to translate everything. And please don't be intimidated by the Hebrew if you're less familiar with sources. Everything, I hope, will be clear whether you're following inside or not. So the first is a pithy statement, which we're going to shortly take out of context, but a pithy statement made by the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in source number one, the Gemara in Yoma, which is a Masechet, which is dedicated actually to Yom Kippur. That's the Yom, the day that's being referred to in that the title of that Masechet. Migmar ba'atikta kashya mechadita. Literally, it's Aramaic. It means to learn old is harder than to learn new. What's it talking about? So look at Rashi in the source number two. Specifically, Misha lamad v'hisich da'ato v'shakach. Someone who once upon a time learned. They were in yeshiva, they were in seminary. When they were younger, they had more time maybe, and they went to classes. But then they took a break. Life got in the way. And you forget some of the things you learned when you're younger. Says Rashi, kosha lachzor v'lilmod masha shakach, yotar mimasha lo lamad. To go back and relearn the things that you once upon a time learned, but then forgot, in some ways can be more difficult than to learn something new. Right? Which is a specific scenario, but it's really, of course, addressing something that we all know, which is, it's more fun to read the book the first time. It's exciting. There are some people, and I'm always jealous of them, who love rereading, or, you know, years later going to the same show again. Right? And there are people who do enjoy that. But I think it's more of a minority. Right? For most of us, there's a certain innate excitement about something new. So even if you forgot it, says Rashi, but the fact that you know you once upon a time learned it makes it a little bit harder to buckle down and to focus than it would be to learn something new and exciting. New vistas are more exciting. Okay? In a somewhat similar manner, take a look at source number three, a second Gemara. This is the Gemara in Masechet Sukkah. The Gemara here is talking about certain things that make HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, particularly unique and compassionate and special. And there's a few examples or interpretations. But one of which, says the Gemara, is based on a pasuk in this past week's Parsha, in Parshas Ki Tavo, V'haya im shamoa tishma. Right? Now, what is this double language? If you will hear, you will hear. What is this? It seems to be redundant, obviously. So again, perhaps the simplest understanding is sometimes the biblical Hebrew is poetic. Right? Sometimes, not everything is purely economical and utilitarian. We use exactly the word or the number of words that are needed. Sometimes we speak in royal wees and poetic and rhetorical flourishes. Lahavdil of Shakespeare could do it, so the Torah could, or others could do it. So that might be the simplest answer. But the Gemara here assumes that if there's a double language, if you will hear, you will hear, it must mean that there's two types of hearing going on. What are we talking about? So it says the Gemara where it's underlined, source number three, Im Shamoa B'Yashan, Tishma b'chadash. Only if you will quote unquote hear, we'll have to see in a moment what this means, only if you'll hear the first time, you'll hear when it was old, once upon a time, then you'll be able, tishma b'chadash, then you'll be able to hear again when it's new. However, im yifne levavcha, which is a pasuk from later in Devarim, if you will, so to speak, ignore, you will forget it, you will not turn your heart towards this quote unquote old thing, shuv lo tishma, you won't be able to learn anything new either. It sounds like a little bit of a riddle. Don't be confused. Rashi is our guide. Take a look at source number four. What says Rashi? What are we talking about? Again, something similar. Imata Shomea B'Yashan referred to someone who reviewed their learning. Again, the first Gemara was also talking about something similar. You learned something once upon a time and you forgot it because you didn't review. So here, says Rashi, we're talking about it from the other side, from the other view of the mirror. If a person did review and therefore remembers the quote-unquote old things that they learned, then tishma b'chadash, meaning, where it's underlined, tidchakem bo lahavin dvarim chadashim mitoch dvarim yishenim. If you have the older knowledge that's assimilated back, sometimes it can be even in the subconscious, but it's there, it's in the hard drive. It's still there. You don't need to do a hard reset. It's still there. So then when you see new things, sometimes it's conscious, but sometimes it's even subconscious. Your level of understanding of the new, of course, is far sharper and astute because you have the background information. If you pause just for 1 second, the truth to this is obvious if you take it out of the academic learning sense. You just think about life experience, right? Not everyone learns from their experiences, but you should. And the wise people in the world, and I don't mean whether you have a PhD or not, some of the most foolish people I know in the world are the ones with PhDs. Not all, but it's certainly not a given that if you have a PhD, you're wise. But wise people are people who learn from experience. Sometimes there's good experiences, sometimes there's bad experiences. And when you go, when you have a certain experience at one stage of life, you are, if you've learned from your experiences, if you have them, you are filtering whatever you're currently going through, sometimes instantaneously. You know, you're filtering 1,000 experiences that you had throughout your life in a millisecond, which helps you react better to whatever's going on. That's what it means. You know, that's life is the best teacher. That's what it means. You have to be a willing student. So in a more academic sense, Rashi says, the Gemara is saying the same thing here also. If you are holding onto still on some level the old things that you learned, so then you'll be able to glean new insights because you have that background information. Again, in Torah, just to make the obvious point, again, I think it's beyond Torah, but in the Torah context, what he means to say is, if once upon a time you heard a Hilchos Shabbos shir, and you learned about what happens if I'm eating out, and where do I light? Do I light Shabbos candles where I'm sleeping? Do I light Shabbos where I'm eating? You know, it's something that every woman is at some point has had to ask themselves and wasn't sure. But if you kind of reviewed it, and you still kind of basically know it, so then 10, 15, 20 years later, when you hear a different Hilchos Shabbos shir, about a different aspect of Shabbos candles, already your level of analysis and interpretation of this new shir, building on the base that you have because you remember what you learned, is obviously going to be at a higher level than someone who A, never learned it before, or B, maybe that woman who was sitting next to you in the shir 20 years ago, but who completely forgot and doesn't follow it, right? This is obvious. Okay, so now both of these are very nice ideas, but so far they have absolutely nothing to do with what I told you this year was going to be about. Right? I'm not, you know, used car salesman, I am not trying to take you for a ride. I set you up this way specifically because I want to turn our attention now to the key source in the entire shir, which is an essay in a book called Ma'amarei Yemei HaRatzon. This is a collection of sichot, of discussions that were given by one of the great religious leaders, spiritual thinkers of the middle and second half of the 20th century, Rav Shlomo Volbe. Volbe was originally European, but he made Aliyah. And this is a collection of the sichot, or shmuzes, that he gave in yeshivos. This particular one, which is one of the earliest ones in the book, goes back to, if my count is correct, we're talking about 62 years ago, right? But profound wisdom, I think, is just as true now as it was then. And as you'll see throughout the source sheet, we are going to constantly be coming back to his analysis of the primary sources. So basically, the rhythm, if you will, or the structure of today's shir is going to be oscillating between primary sources and then seeing what Rav Volbe did with those sources, and then hopefully, you know, we ourselves adding to them. So why did we start with these two Gemaras, which seem to be very interesting about learning? What do they have to do about Rosh Hashanah? What do they have to do about life? So says Rav Volbe so profoundly. He starts off with a bang. He quotes that first Gemara that we saw. Atika kasha michadata. We said, right, the old is harder than the new, right? It's hard to review. New stuff is not as exciting, right? That's more hard, right? It's more exciting to do the new stuff. Says Rav Volbe, boom, right out of the bat, Zehu hakoshi hagadol b'hachayim. Exactly. This is a metaphor, not just for Torah or study, but for life. This is the biggest challenge in life as you get older, when you've already experienced so much, is to still find that inspiration, that excitement, when, by definition, less and less are new experiences. Kol asher adam ba b'yamim, yoter v'yoter, the older a person gets, Mishtarad ha-shigra al-chayav b'torah b'mitzvot ve'enu margish od kol kach ha-chidush she-bedvarim ve'enu mitchadesh od. Right? Now, sometimes it's exactly the way he described it. It's obviously a little bit more nuanced because different people have different life experiences. But let's take a person who would be colloquially referred to as an FFB. Someone who's been religious their whole life or certainly been religious for many, 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 many years. Right? So in the beginning, it's exciting. There's a certain challenge to the first time you ride a bike or have to light Shabbos candles, or figure out when to go to the mikvah, or all those things. But at some point, it's also thrilling and exciting. Says Rav Volbe, on the one hand, it's obvious, almost banal that he's saying it. On the other hand, to me, it's comforting to have someone of his stature, like, okay, he gets me. It's not just me. Apparently, there's a real truth here. That the longer you're doing it, the less exciting it is. It's more exciting than that, you know, that first time you made Pesach could have been terrifying, but what an accomplishment, what a sense of accomplishment, Right? It's exhilarating. You sit down, the first time I made Pesach, I made Shabbos, I made, is incredible. And at some point, it's just another year, and it gets harder, right? And again, my frame of reference, my wife's frame of reference is yeshiva boys or seminary girls. So, and we often see them, even if you don't work in that field, because they're often visiting our houses and our communities, right? There's a certain excitement and a certain, you know, sometimes a little too passionate, a certain excitement that happens at that stage of life. And many people spend the rest of their lives, and I would say tragically, just trying to recapture that magic. Now, I say tragically, not because it's a bad thing to try to recapture the magic of excitement and passion, but it's tragic because they haven't figured out how to put meaning actually in this stage of their life. And they're just looking to recreate seminary or recreate yeshiva. That's a huge mistake and tragic. But this is the problem. And Rav Volpe says these Gemaras are basically on a deeper level, metaphorically, they're acknowledging that problem. Or in the second Gemara, which described how if you remember your old learning, if you review, then that will, so to speak, help you in the future. Says Rav Volpe, that's also a lottery ticket with priceless value to understanding the challenges and the potential of religious life. Kol ha'esek b'yashan, second line, source number 5, all of our efforts, all of our work is with the yashan, is with the old, right? We're a timeless religion. We're not looking to reinvent the wheel, right? We are very conservative with the lowercase c. By definition, we're orthodox. Our esek is with the yashan. But says Rav Volpe, if you just live in the past, if you just stuck with, yeah, but that's what they did, and that's what, whether the they meaning my parents, or the Chasam Sofer, or Moshe Rabbeinu, whoever else you think you know exactly what they did. Aval haskula is biyashan hu shetitchatkem. He's quoting Rashi now. L'havin devarim chadashim mitoch devarim yishanim. If you're just stuck in the past, there's no magic there. The magic, again, this is Rashi. The magic is to use the past to evolve and to find new meaning and new applications. We don't believe in revolution, but evolution. Hine atika kasha micharata. Again, going back to that first one. It's true. The hard, the repetitive, that is harder than new and exciting. Avoskulara chidush munachat dafka batika. But if the new is completely detached, unmoored from the old, then it's not authentic. That's fly by night. That's just, you know, people making up all sorts of things. Now is not the topic or the time to discuss how do you, you know, sometimes certain things look like new, but, and sometimes people, well, frankly, that's often a divide in the Orthodox community. Well, is this a good new or a bad new? Professor Schachter from YU uses the phraseology, there's a difference between a chiddush and a shinui. Chiddush is good, shinui is bad. Now, where's the line? Not today's topic, but a very fair question. Okay? But says Rav Volpe, this is it. Figuring out a way to still live with the past. Be anchored to our past. Whether our past is capital P, the Jewish people's past, or your past, your last 10 years, your last 20 years, your last 40 years, your last 50 years, etc. How do I not disassociate myself from that? Not have a self-induced amnesia, so to speak, and ignore all the benefits and experiences and the learning that I did in the past. And at the same time, still have all the benefits of newness, of excitement, of freshness. As you see at the end of the paragraph where I double underlined it, because I learned how to use that application in Microsoft Word, and I really like this phrase. V'heichan hi haderech l'hitchadshut demitzvot la'adam she'einenu tza'ir od liyamim. How do we find that sense? Again, it's everyone needs it in life, of hischachus, of newness, of excitement, of renewal. How does someone who's been frum for decades of their life, how do you find the excitement? Now again, it could be that there is a person who, you know, becomes aware of a whole area of mitzvot which they never really were aware of. Or there was an area of mitzvot that they never really took seriously and now they decide to be serious about that. So there, in parentheses, a certain part of their life, they do have that real newness. But he's describing what I think is true for most of us, which is, for the most part, again, I'm not saying that everyone here is perfect. I assume that no one here is actually perfect. I know I'm not. But for the most part, we're good people. I don't just mean good like we're nice. I mean even we're good like we do the mitzvos. Okay, every now and then we're weak, and every now and then there's something we don't know about. But if you've been good and you're doing the mitzvos for year after year after year, what's the big deal about Rosh Hashanah? Like, what's so exciting? What's the newness? To have that passion in life, you need it. It's chachus. That's human nature. It's psychology. But okay, so the first, you know, again, as an example, that seminary experience, or the first year of marriage, or certain, there are certain things which you have that. But the bracha of life is to find it and then to carry it with you. But at some point, the more you're carrying it with you, the more stale it gets. So how do we avoid that trap? Now we're talking. Now we're being honest and authentic. This is a real question and a real challenge for religious life. So let's see his answer. I'm not saying this is the only answer, but it'll be the answer that we study and we think about for today. Source number 6. Amazing Gemara, which is the basis of a very famous minhag and artistic image in modern-day Israel, the Rimon. As you know, Israeli artists are obsessed with the Rimon. I happen to love Rimon art too, personally. There's something about it. But we know, of course, Rosh Hashanah is the holiday of the Rimon. Where does that come from? This Gemara. Source number 6 says the Gemara something astounding. Poshe Yisrael, Shemelein Mitzos Kerimon. Even the sinners of Israel, the Jews on the lowest level, the most distant from Halacha, the furthest from Hashem, even they are full of mitzvos, like the pomegranate. And this is the assumption, right? I don't think it's actually true that the 613 seeds in a pomegranate. I have a few tainas on my kindergarten teacher. She told me a few things that are not exactly correct. This is not the only one, but it's one of them. But basically, that's a correct symbolism. That's where the idea of the pomegranate comes from, Rosh Hashanah, right? All the mitzvos. But the context here is specific. It's not just about Rimon mitzvos. Specifically, that even the sinner has so many mitzvos like a Rimon. And it's based on a play on words from a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and I give you that source in the continuation. Okay, but that's a pasuk. Now, on the one hand, it's very maybe flattering to all Jews. If you're a real Am Yisrael type person, it's very comforting. You see every Jew, you know. But there is something a little bit objectively difficult about this. It's just what Rav Volbi puts his finger on in source number 7, right? If something is full, right, you don't have to, I mean, I know it's been a while since any of us took physics class or, you know, any of those hard sciences, but if something is full, something is complete, there is no room for anything else. That's what the word full means. And not the way we colloquially use it, but if it's really full, it's really full. So says Rav Volbi, source number 7, I don't understand this Gemara. It's nice, it's beautiful, but it doesn't make any sense. Im hari kanim shebach melei mitzvos kerimon, man yisher od lemeleim lehosif. I'll paraphrase in a more blunt way. If we're giving such a standing ovation and a yeshakayach for even the worst of the Jews, they're mole mitzos kerimon. So what do I need to be frum for? I'll be a poshe Yisrael, I'll be a sinner, I'll be lax. I'm not saying I'm anti. If it's convenient to do a mitzvah, I'll do it. If it's anyway self-serving, I'll do it. But I don't mind, I'll be a poshe Yisrael, I'll be a sinner. And in case anyone looks down at me, I'll say, no, I'll just send them to the Gemara. Don't you learn Gemara? Don't you know? I am a sinner, and I'm mole mitzvos kerimon. So what's left? I mean, that's such a high compliment. Where else? What's the benefit in then being religious? Why should I try to be any better? What is the Gemara telling us? Halo ef shar lachnis od garinin lerimon shalohu mole legamrei. If the rimon is already full of seeds, there's no room for any more seeds. You already told me that the sinner has all the mitzvos that fill up the rimon. So what's left for me to do? Why should I try to do any more? The Rimon is already full. Uba al karcha. So obviously, it's such a difficult question. It's obvious that there must be something else going on in the Gemara. Clearly, there's something deeper. What's the deeper message? He says, where it's underlined, source number 7, Aleinu lomar, it must be that we have to say, Ki ha-havdel ben harikanim v'hamaleim. Here's the key point. Einin b'kamut ha-mitzvot. Ela b'ichutan. It's not about the quantity of the mitzvot, but the quality. It's true. And again, what this means and why is not our topic per se. But yes, the Gemara is saying is that there is something unbelievably redeeming, even about the Jew furthest from mitzvot, from we would consider from kite, quote unquote. And they may be full of mitzvos, whether they realize it or not. The difference between that person and who we want to be is not necessarily in how many mitzvos he or she does and how many mitzvos we do, not in the kamut, the quantity, but in the quality of those mitzvot. Gam harei kadin shebach, melein mitzvos kriyun. Yes, it's true, the Gemara is saying, even people far from observance, actually have far more mitzvahs than they realize. They fill the whole Rimon. But they are Malayin with a term which we're going to define it momentarily. Malayim mitzvot kalot. V'chein im kol mitzvot shalahem heim nishem reikanim. Apparently, there's a type of mitzvah which you can do. We can metaphorically envision it as a seed. We can shtup it in. We can fill the whole Rimon shell with all of the seeds. But because there's something, we haven't defined it yet, but because there's something missing in the quality of those mitzvot, in the character of those mitzvot, such a person, despite the Rimon being full, the Gemara still refers to them as being empty. Reikonin. The empty ones are full. It seems to be a contradiction. It's mutually exclusive. How can you call them empty and say that they're full? And evidently, the descriptions and the terms being used are not describing quantity, but quality. It's not just about how many mitzvot we do, but how we do them. There's some quality that you could be absent, and therefore, even if you did all the mitzvot, you still would be, so to speak, empty. You're still poshe Yisrael. Even though you have all these mitzvot, you're still considered a sinner. And yet, if you would have that quality, then you would be considered a tzaddik, or whatever term you'd prefer. So, of course, now the million-dollar question is, what is missing? If even a poshe Yisrael, even a sinner, even someone who's distant, can do lots and lots of mitzvahs, so many that we could fill the pomegranate shell, husk, whatever the right term is, you forgive me? And yet, they're still considered rake, they're still considered empty, because there's something qualitatively missing. What is that quality? Take a look at source number 8. So for this, he turns our attention to a Gemara, which I need to give you a little bit of a background for. This is actually a very, very famous passage in the beginning of Masechet Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara describes, let's assume for now it's intended to be allegorically, but it's not just allegorical, it's a conversation or phenomenon that will happen at some point in the future. Some point in the future, there will be Geula, Mashiach, and all those other things that we don't exactly understand but hope for. And says the Gemara, at that point, the non-Jews are going to come to Hashem and complain. It's not fair that all of a sudden all these good things are happening to the Jewish people, and who knows what exactly is happening to us, but it's, you know, that's a whole machlokas, which maybe we'll have a topic on. If people want to learn about Yemos HaMashiach, I'm not sure I know exactly, but we can spend a week or two on that if you want at some point later in the year. But the Gemara says that the non-Jews will go to Hashem and say, it's not fair. You gave them Moshe. You gave them the Torah. Okay, but if you'd given it to us, then we'd be doing all these good things. Then we'd be getting the big prize at the end of time in history. It's not fair. The Gemara describes such a potential conversation. So in that context, so the Gemara tells us, we'll pick up in source number 8. They say to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Tnei Lano Mirosh V'Na'asana, you give us a chance. You gave the Jews 5,000 years, 6,000, how many years you gave them to get it right? Give us a chance. Give us the Torah. Give us those secrets. We'll do it. So the Gemara says that Hashem says, you know what? I'll give you one chance. And I'm not only going to give you only one chance, I'm going to give you an easy chance. I'm going to give you what the Gemara says, Yeshli mitzvah kala. I'm going to give you an easy mitzvah to do. What's that? Sukkah shema. God's going to say, okay, you want a chance? Keep the mitzvah of sukkah, the mitzvah, the holiday of sukkahs. Lechu v'asu osa. Go, build a sukkah, sit in it, see how it is for a week. The Gemara describes how they fail at that. They fail at that. Okay, not our topic at all. Okay? But in that context, what are we're pulling out from this fascinating imagined potential discussion between God and the nations of the world? That sukkah is referred to an easy mitzvah or an unimportant mitzvah. Right? We are familiar with hakala or akula. In this neighborhood, that's like a dirty word. Used to be people would go to the rabbi for a kula, now they come for a chumrah. Okay? So there's mitzvot chamuros are the serious ones, you know, idolatry, murder, sexual morality, that's the chamuros. Then there's the kalos, you know, you can fill in the blank, I don't know, Asher Yatzar and Baruch Shamar and I don't know, something like the little stuff. So the Gemara actually calls sukkah one of the little things. A mitzvah kala. So the Gemara itself says, one second, let's hold on a second. What about sukkah is not so important or so? What does that mean, mitzvah kala? The Gemara asks, underline source number 8. Am I karli mitzvah kala? The Gemara here, this is incredibly important. What about sukkah makes it a mitzvah kala? Bishum de les bechis our own kiss. It's not that expensive. It happens to be, I remember when we used to live in Baltimore, and many people, maybe even here, but it's more of a chuslar's thing, we had a fiberglass, beautiful, I was the rabbi, Rebbetzin, we had a big sukkah, one of the walls had a painted mural of the Kotel on it, we used to host the whole shul for a kiddush, I don't remember how much it cost, but that wasn't so cheap. And people, you know, you actually have to buy sukkahs. You know, now in Israel, everyone's got pergolas and different things. Although the first time you pay for that pergola, it's not so cheap either. Okay, but the point is, you don't have to keep on paying for it, hopefully. You don't have to keep on paying for the pergola. But the bottom line is, halachically, you make a sukkah out of nothing. The requirements for the walls are almost nothing. In theory, I mean, you could invest in it, but you don't have to. And the schach, the gemara itself, the schach is the schmutz. The leftover tree branches, the leftover leaves, that's schach. How much could it cost? It's nothing. So says the Gemara, what makes sukkah so kala? Less bechisaron kiss. It doesn't cost much. It doesn't cost much. Okay? Now let's see, with that ingredient, let's see the magic that Rav Volbi weaves and creates from that one little source. Source number 9, bottom of the page. Umizeh, says Rav Volbi, now we're talking. Remember, just content. Why do we see this? Because we said, previously we had said, even though the people distant, the people who we don't want to be like, have tons of mitzvos, there is, they can fill the pomegranate, but apparently there's something lacking in their quality. So we said, well, what are they lacking? And therefore, what do we want to have? So Rav Volbi says, now we have the answer. Umizeh hagdara shel mitzvot kalot. Source number 9. She'ein la'adam nisayon be'asiyatan. Here's the point, says Rav Volbi, and this is the key to the whole shiur today. The definition of a quote-unquote lighter, easier, lower-level mitzvah is very simple, although far-reaching and profound. It means a mitzvah which isn't a challenge for you, which isn't hard. Kalut ha-mitzvah nimdedet b'zeh she'ena ole l'adam kesef o nisayon acher. The Gemara's example with the sukkah had to do with financial. And let's be honest, finances can be a challenge for people. First of all, psychologically, some people have a harder time spending money than other people. We all know there's different personalities when it comes to spending. But objectively, no one's bank account is infinite. And unless you're someone who has so much money that they can't even count it, for most of us, there's a limit. And there are things in life that are hard. And we all know being frum is very expensive, certainly compared to the regular lifestyle. And, inflation exactly has not helped any of us the last year plus, and who knows what the future will bring. There's a lot of anxiety. I've seen it in my own extended family. There's a lot of anxiety, right, over finances. So that could be an isayon. We're not poo-pooing that. You don't have to feel like, oh, I'm a bad person. I'm not so religious. I care about money. Well, no, it just means you're normal. Of course. That's what, but says Rav Volbi, the Gemara didn't mean that that's the entire definition. It used it as an example. Just like it's hard to spend money on something, there could be other things that are hard for people. Last line, ki bevadai, lav dafka chisaron kisu hafchana. Obviously, says Rav Volbi, the Gemara didn't mean that the only definition is things that don't cost much. Oh, that's easy. As opposed to any other things in life? No. It could be financial. Elakol davar shu nisayon la'adam. And this, I think, is the key. Now we're really cooking now. Says Rav Volbi, a mitzvah kala, quote-unquote, is a mitzvah that's not hard for you. Now, how could it be hard? It could be hard because it costs a lot for your budget. It could be hard because you really wanted to do something else. This is, you know, certain people have certain taivas. Certain people are drawn to certain things, and other people have no problem with that whatsoever. It could be hard because the timing of it is hard. You have other obligations. You have other things going on. There's so many different ways why something could be hard for you. Finance could be one of them, but it could be anything, says Rav Volbi. The definition of a mitzvah kal is a mitzvah that comes easy. That doesn't mean it's meaningless. A mitzvah is a mitzvah, of course. But each of us have mitzvahs which are easy for us. Those for us are the mitzvah kalot. The opposite, a chamura, doesn't necessarily mean with some, again, we don't know what our, you know, Hashem is the big accountant in the sky, and the Rambam and others make it very clear that there's no human who could ever fully understand how God weighs and calculates the value of mitzvahs. That's way beyond human capabilities. But in this world, says Rav Volbi, if you want to know what's a quote-unquote mitzvah kala for you versus a mitzvah chamura for you, he says, we now have the definition. If it's hard for you, if there's a nisayon, if there's a challenge in doing the right thing, then for you, that's a chamura. Yes, says there could be times where that could be something that's quote-unquote objectively hard. For certain people, Shemir Shabbos could be hard. For other people, they take it, they've never known a Shabbos in their life without it. They can't even imagine. So for one person, that's a chamur. It's a hard mitzvah. And for other people, not at all. Turn over the page. Now we understand, he says, going back to the pomegranate. We didn't forget our pomegranate. Don't you worry. Gam poshe Yisrael, hey Malay and mitzvahs karimah. Yes, the Gemara said, even the person who's the most distant from tradition is full of mitzvahs like the pomegranate. Says Rav Olbi, you just have to add one word. Mitzvot kalot. Someone who doesn't have, again, this is a little bit of a stereotype, but I think, you know, or even in a presumptuous, but I think it makes a lot of sense intuitively. If you're not genuinely committed to Torah and mitzvahs, so why are you doing lots of mitzvahs according to the Gemara? Presumably, each person, everyone's different, but presumably it's because these are the kind of things that come easy to you anyway. Right? There are certain people, for example, I'm not taking anything away from the good that they're doing. Certain people like to do good. Right? We all know, I think, I certainly do, people who are not, quote unquote, from the way we define it, who are unbelievably nice, dedicating their lives, sometimes to the vocation, the avocation, to chesed, to helping people. So they're not doing it because they think that the Torah told them to do it. But for them, that speaks to their neshama. They enjoy it, they get sipuka nefesh, they get fulfillment out of it. Of course it's meaningful. They're malei mitzvos. But they're mitzvos kalas. Why they're doing things that come naturally to them. It happens to be the right thing to do, and they deserve credit for that. Because it comes natural. Osin mitzvos avarak mitzvos ein nisayon b'kivon. They're doing mitzvos that, for whichever thing it is, that comes easy to them. And that's not a contradiction, he says. Ein bo stira. Hey malei mitzvos kalos, ubechol zot heim reikanim shevach. What we asked before, how could the Gemara say that they're full of mitzvahs like the pomegranate, and yet the Gemara itself called them the empty ones? And we also asked, at the same time, if they're already filling the pomegranate, what's left for us to do? And the answer to both of those questions, says Rav Olbi now, we understand is the same. You can be full of mitzvahs, but you're empty, quote-unquote, obviously it's a metaphor, you're empty, there's something seriously lacking, if all of those mitzvahs are just the ones that come easy to you. If you're only excelling in doing the things that come natural to you and come easy to you, even if they happen to be, you know, we can check off a lot of mitzvos. But it's the things that are coming easy to you, either because of your personality, nature versus nurture, either the home you were raised in, the neighborhood you live in. Right? There's certain people, again, I'm not judging them now. I'm just giving you examples to process. And this may hit some of you very close to home, but I'm saying this just an abstract. I could give many examples, but you know, one example, there could be a certain woman for whom the laws of tznius are hard. If you put that person in one neighborhood, where pretty much that's what all of her friends are doing, she's going to do it just because it's much easier than the alternative. You took exactly that woman, and she or her husband or somebody got a job, and they transferred into a little different neighborhood, and those standards were, you know, only a few of the frumies, quote-unquote, you know, dressed that way. It would be the same exact clothing that she didn't wear in a different neighborhood, it would all of a sudden become a nisayon. Right? And there are other people for whom, I know this is a rare phenomenon, but it does exist, there are other people for whom tznius is actually easy. It comes natural to them. And there's other things that are hard. And there are other people who are really genuinely frum, and they struggle with this or that. Again, I've had this discussion, you know, some people, like, they're fighting, whether it's with their parents or the rebbeim, over 1 inch. So again, you could say the teacher or the parent are being silly, and maybe they are. But sometimes, I honestly ask, you already are committed. It's not like you're walking around like they do in downtown Tel Aviv. You're already basically doing it. Why would you like stop right? And the answer is because everyone's different. And everyone's nisayon and everyone's yetzer, tov and ra, is at a different place. And for some people, right there is the line. And they can go there, but not further. At least not yet. And for other people, they're very far away. Everyone's different. The things that come easy to us doesn't mean that they're less, they may be still mitzvos, but in terms of our religious development, those are the kalot. The things that are genuinely hard for us, there's a nisayon, financial nisayon, emotional nisayon, maybe this is a nisayon in my marriage, it could be all sorts of different things, with my children, How do I relate to my parents? I relate to my children. There could be so many different examples. Those, says Rav Volbi, those are the quote-unquote chamuros. It's not a contradiction. And therefore, a person can be full of mitzvos. But if the only mitzvos that he or she does are the ones that come easy to them, then there's, on some level, the Gemara says, you're empty. You don't have exactly what we're looking for. The goal in life is to do the right thing, but not only the ones that come easy to us. Everyone has mitzvos that are natural to us. I say there are certain people who are naturally balei chesed. And there are other people who were not born that way. For them to work with a special needs child or for them to help someone else is hugely difficult. We're all born into different circumstances. Again, we're raised differently depending how you were raised. Certain things come easier to you and some people were raised in a house that they gave tzedakah. So whatever amount of money they have when they're an adult, it's going to be relatively easy for them to give because that's how they grew up. Other people were not raised in such a home. And they could be making who knows how much money. And it's hard to give. Everyone's different. It could be davening, it could be Shabbos, right? Certain people grew up, the Shabbos table was magical. They loved it. The Zmiros, the Divrei Torah, the camaraderie between the siblings, special time with mom and dad, whatever. So for them, when they grow up, this is what they're looking forward to, having a Shabbos table. And other people, Shabbos brings back boredom at best, and in certain unfortunate cases, much worse. For them, to have a good Shabbos table, have a meaningful Shabbos, it's going to be a very big nisayon, etc., etc. Everyone is different. We all have to do the mitzvos. But the mitzvos in which we're really going to be judged, the real growth in life, are those mitzvos which are hard for us. An example of this, I'm going to run through this very quickly, just because I want to keep on going to the end, but as an example of this phenomenon in the terms of the reward, I mean, let's be honest, on the one hand, Perkei Avos tells us, you know, we should be just doing the mitzvos for the reward. On the other hand, you know, this time of year especially, most of us can't help but thinking, that may be not the reason I'm doing it, but I'd rather be the Miyichya than the Miyamos. I'd rather be rewarded, you know. So in that context, the Gemara here says in source number 10 that, again, whatever exactly this means, nobody, certainly not me, can totally understand it because we're discussing like metaphysical, mystical ideas. But when it comes to Hashem's system of reward and punishment, says the Medrash in source number 10, even Rishayim, even wicked people, again, everyone does something good. It could be good to their spouse, it could be good to their child, it could be good to a poor person on the street. Even objective Rishayim do some mitzvos, and they deserve to be rewarded. If Hashem is a righteous judge, he'll reward everyone, no matter who they are, for the good that they did. So says the Gemara, wicked people will only get their reward in this world. Now obviously, which is not our topic at all, the most inscrutable and most difficult topic in the whole world, of course, is evil, and understanding how the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper. So sometimes, like all the time, you know, if not in our own neighbors, and at least in the media, we see people who, by Torah standards, would be considered not tzaddikim, right? And they seem to be prospering just fine. You know, where is the justice in the world? So that you're not the first person to ask. It goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It is not only a legitimate question, it is the question for any religious thinking person. Okay? A lot of different approaches, and probably none of them are really going to really answer the question. But one of the technical answers, if you will, that you find numerous sources in Jewish tradition for, are similar to this source. That is to say, Hashem rewards people for the mitzvahs that they did because they deserve it, but Hashem will dafka give it to them in this world. But where real reward could have come, that they're not going to get rewarded. If anything, they're going to suffer. Again, I was never there. I hope it will be a long time until I get there. So I can't really say I know and understand what's being described. Of course, I don't. But metaphorically, the best we can do would be like saying, and you know, when you're a kid, you know, I don't know, every year there's like a different toy that's the hot toy. And then your child says, I need all of them. Or your grandchild, you know, you'd buy all that stuff. So, but let's for now, since I don't even know, I don't want to pick it. The last time I spoke, I think it was my kids still make fun of me, for those in the neighborhood who were there. Yeah, I'm not going to get, but just for anyone who remembers the Geffner Bar Mitzvah, already my wife's getting tense. She's getting anxious. That was on a Shabbos, Shal Shudas, so it wasn't recorded. My kids still cringe. I was trying to be relevant to these Bar Mitzvah boys who are sitting there. I was trying to give examples of different toys, and I picked, you know, one of these like PlayStation type things. Anyway, I picked something, and my kids are like, you're like 20 years behind, Abba. Like, I never felt so old as I did at that moment, or when they constantly remind me of that. So I'm not going to try to give examples. I'll just give a timeless example, marbles. Okay? There's some kids who are into marbles 50 years ago, 60 years, 70 ago, and there are kids who are into marbles now, right? Marbles is the kind of, and I'm assuming that that's a weird thing for an adult to be into. Okay, let's just, you'll grant me that for the purpose of today's year. Okay, so imagine a child who's, you know, did well on a test and the parents reward them with 100 marbles. Right, or something like that. Or so whatever you can fill in the blank for whatever your child or grandchild likes. Imagine that child is now 30 or 40 years old and they're still getting rewarded with more and more marbles. You wouldn't be jealous of that person. You say, it's a Nebuch. Right? It's a Nebuch. That's your reward? That's what you're getting paid in? You have more marbles than the next guy? When you're a kid, that's a kid's reward. So, as a mushal, that's what the Gemara says about a lot of the reward we can get in this world, whether it's the most beautiful house and the most beautiful car and all the things that people do want in this world as adults, but all of that, compared to the next world, will be like kids to an adult. Like marbles compared to whatever. Okay? Now, why should that dafka be? Why should Hashem dafka reward us in this world as opposed to the next world? For Rishon, it says Revolbi in source number 11, it goes based exactly on this point we were making. Because the Rishayim who do mitzvos, why are they doing, again, I'm not, there's very few people who would really be a Rasha. But let's say someone is a Rasha, so why are they doing mitzvos? Again, we said before, because intuitively, what must be the situation? It's the kind of mitzvah that comes easy to them. It's the kind of mitzvah that they like doing for their own reasons. It's part of their nature. So listen, again, the best example, or maybe the first example, Esav, right? No greater example of wickedness in the Torah than Esav. And what did Chazal say? A paragon of Kibud Av Aim. Because whatever his reasons were, right? That came natural to him. Natural because he really loved his father. Natural because he was manipulative and he thought if he'll butter up his father, then he'll get a better Yerusha. Whatever the reason is, it became natural to him. So says Rav Volbi, if Rishayim are doing mitzvahs, which they deserve to be rewarded for, because everyone deserves to be rewarded for the good that they do, but they're doing things that are part of their nature, then it makes sense, Mida Kenegan Mida, that they'll be rewarded through nature in this world. But the real reward, the reward with compound interest, the reward where you really can strike it big, are the mitzvahs that we had to go beyond our nature. Maybe my nature is to be selfish. Maybe my nature is to be stingy. My nature is not to be self-reflective and therefore davening is hard for me. Whatever it is. And I overcame that. I did it anyway. I pushed myself, even though it was hard, even when it was hard. So since I had to go beyond my nature to do the mitzvos, so Volbi, it makes sense that the reward will be Mida Kenegan Mida, a magnificent reward that's beyond the limits of nature. Look at we'll do the last underlined part of source number 11. Dafk im aidei mitzvot she kiyumam mehave nisayon la'adam. It's specifically those areas of your life which are a challenge for you. But nevertheless, you overcame that challenge and you did it. Adam mitrachev, that's where we expand, that's where we grow. You've gone beyond your nature, beyond your personality, your natural instincts. Now you're not living a natural world, so to speak, life, you're living a spiritual life. Zehu Adam Male, or what we might call an Adam Hashalem. He's using the term Male, I assume, as a foil with the empty and pomegranate metaphor. Full versus empty. Full of seeds, empty. So a person who's full, who's truly full, not who's Reikonin Shabbat, but someone who's full of quality mitzvos, whose pomegranate is completely full, is a person who's not just doing mitzvos that come easy to him or her, but even those mitzvos which are a challenge. And I want to end with one last point, which we'll do very quickly, and that is in the next group of sources. When Balak and Bilam, right, they're trying to curse the Jewish people, so Bilam has been hired, he tries to curse them, and yet again a blessing comes out. Now, source number 12, we read very famous metaphor, Heinam kalavi yakum uchari yisnase. The Jewish people are compared to, whether it's a baby lion or a grown-up lion, kind of crouching and then springing to its feet. Am kalavi, we're like a lion, pouncing, jumping up. What is that talking about? What does that mean to Jewish people like a lion? So Rashi says, it doesn't refer to our physical strength. This should come to no surprise to any of us. Right? Jews are not known to be the bodybuilders of the world. What does it mean? It's specifically referring to our spiritual strength. Namely, says Rashi, source number 13, Mitgabrim kalaviyu chari lachtofet mitzvot. We jump up, we spring into action to grab the mitzvos. For example, he's talking about men early in the morning. They're tired, and nevertheless, they wake up early and they put on the talis and they read Kriya Shema at the right time and they put on the tefillin. Right, that's the Rashi. It's a Rashi in Chumash available to anyone. So says the Maharal of Prague, source number 14. Something so profound, and it fits into everything that we're saying. In what sense do mitzvos make us like a lion, such that even Bilam, the non-Jews, admire us, so to speak, from afar? What's the deeper message here? Source number 14. Mevnei sheha mitzvot heim gvura. Misha osa mitzvah poel pula elokit nifla'a. What's being described here specifically are things which require effort, right? That lion springing into action, using all of its power and force to jump to do something. Says the Maharal, what Rashi is trying to get at is that mitzvos require gvura, not the kind of strength that can lift a barbell. Spiritual, emotional, psychological strength. Someone who can do that, go against their natural instinct, that is, so to speak, beyond human. It's a pula elokit. It's an amazing nifla'a. It's almost a godly activity, or at least the godly part of our neshamas are burning bright. And they're basically, you know, it's an old metaphor. You know, you have a little guy on the big elephant, you know, and he's called the rider, right? Really, who's really in charge? Until the elephant decides to go where it wants to go, the guy thinks he's in charge, right? So we think we're in charge, but if the, you know, often it's our taivas taking us who knows where. But sometimes we really are in charge, and we may be the little guy riding the elephant, but sometimes we can really grab the reins. Something is hard for us. The elephant wants to go one way, the rider pulls him the other direction. We have a taiva, we have yetzahara, we do want to do this, we don't want to do that. I'm not in the mood to daven today, I'm not in the mood to who knows what, and I do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. So says the Maharal, that's Am Kalavi. That's us doing something that's almost like the Hulk. We're like a superhero. We have superpowers. Amazing. So that's the Maharal. So says, now this will be the last source we see inside, source number 15. Revolbi, one last time. This is a beautiful conclusion. I love it. He, using this Maharal, he says, now we can kind of, it adds one more layer to everything we've been seeing. Zeho inyan kol mitzvot. She'enen masim tivim. The real mitzvos, the things which really are important for us to work on in life, are not the things that come natural to us. Elahit gabrut al hateva, going beyond, surpassing, transcending our nature. V'hit'alut l'mahalach elokit, to connect to some godly vision of life. That's what Bilam saw. That's what he was amazed at. Even people for whom it's very hard, and here I speak as someone who this is one of my nisyonot, waking up, I'm a night person. And some people who are morning people, other people are night people. As a general rule, I'm convinced that Hashem makes sure that people marry their opposite. Now, I only have two pieces of inside information. My parents and me and my wife. But in both cases, at least, there's only two marriages I know inside out, or at least half my parents and one my own. I saw it with my own parents. They're still arguing 50 plus years later about when to go to sleep and when to wake up. And my father's a morning person, my mom's a night person, and I take after my mom, and I married someone who takes after my dad. Okay? So for certain people, to wake up early in the morning, this is a hitgabrut. That's not davar katan at all. For other people, it might be. Everyone's different. And now we understand. Davka ha-mitzvah, third line, ha-mitzvah ha-chamurot. O davka ha-mitzvah che-kiyuman kashur b'nisayon hitgabrut. Again, whether it's quote-unquote objectively hard, like lots of people would struggle with it, or it's something that's specifically hard for you. Those are the mitzvos, she'esh ben ha-skula. That's where we grow. How come we so often feel like we're running in place? How come so often we feel like, I said at the outset of this year, we're reading the same book over and over again, or watching the same movie over and over and over again? It's because we're doing the same things that come easy to us over and over again. That doesn't mean they're not good. If for you doing chesed is good, and on every, I don't know, making it up, on every Wednesday, that's your chesed day, so that's not good? Of course it's good. But if that's something that comes easy to you, at some point you're not going to feel the same growth coming from it. It's good. And it's certainly good for the people who are benefiting from your chesed. But it's not going to impact you unless there's some degree of difficulty, right? If you've, I don't know when the last time anyone here rode a bike, right? But if you want to go fast, you have to change the gears so there's more resistance. right? When you get it to, what is it, like 1-1, whatever it is, you get the lowest or high, whatever. I know what it feels like. I don't remember the numbers. The easiest it is to pedal is the slowest you go. You can be pedaling and pedaling and pedaling, and some person is going to zoom right by you. You need resistance, right? If you're somebody who likes to run or walk, and there's no more, when there's no more tread on your sneakers, there's no more resistance, you can't go as fast. You can't grow. You can't get as high. Right? You got to, you know, the people who jump, you know, they got to get all the way down so they can jump up higher. Says Rav Volbi, if you don't have difficulties and have challenges, you're not going to grow. A mitzvah chamura is something that is challenging for you, and that is the way we grow. And he says something again. We've been saying it already, but it's good to see him saying it. Yecholot mitzvah chamurut elul yot mitzvah sh'adam dash ba'kevav. What a statement. What he's saying is, for you, a mitzvah, quote-unquote, chamura, could be the kind of mitzvah that for a million other people are easy. Kind of, you know, for certain people, what's a big deal to make a bracha? 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, it's nothing. And there are certain people who are just brachos machines. And for you, you forget about it, it's hard, it was time, I'm always, you know, 3 bites in, that's when I remember, if I'm lucky. For certain people, and for many people, no one would call brachos a hard mitzvah, though we think of other things being hard. It could be something that everyone just says, what's the big deal? And for you, it might be really, really hard. That's not a contradiction. Dvarim shem l'chorek tanim kmo birchas anenin u'shmir saloshon, right? Objectively, you might say, again, it's not hard to watch your mouth the way certain other things might be difficult in life. What does it cost you? It doesn't cost any money. It doesn't require any physical exertion. Like, what are the if I made a list of things that are hard about life, they'd have either be financial, emotional. But the answer is, for many of us, to speak, you know, not lashon hara, is a chamura. Even though, if I was making a list of the top 20 mitzvos, it's not on anyone's list. You know, we talk about the Ten Commandments and thou shalt not this and shalt, right? It's not one of these big philosophical things. It's not belief. It's not love of God. It's just, don't be a gossiper. Don't be a jerk, if I can be blunt. Don't slander people. Don't just sit there and be the gossip person. And the answer, but for a lot of us, that is hard. Actually, he's, right? And therefore, that's the point. So, I'll leave off the last source just because I don't want to go too much longer, even though the last source from Megillat Rut, there's a very beautiful message that I wanted to share with it, but it's just complimenting everything we've seen until now. So I'll let it go. But just to sum up, we asked the question in two different ways, so to speak. One we said is, you know, how are we going to make this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur a season different? There's a certain jadedness or even cynicism that some people bring to shul since they've kind of been there before, done that, and they've had a great Ni'ilah before, and the year was just the same as the one before that. You know, they've heard the shofar, it helped them for a little bit, and then what? So that was one question we asked, and of course the other question we asked was, if what gives us passion and excitement in life, you know, we're all like this, is new and exciting. So what do we do as the years go on and less things are new? Because we've been doing good things, right? We already are religious. We already are doing all sorts of good things. It's not like I just, you know, went into my first Eshet Torah class or NCSY class, or I don't have that newness. There's a certain challenge. And again, I said at the outset, I'm not saying there's only one answer to the question, but the one answer that we were going to share today in the name of Rav Volbi is that too often, and for obvious reasons, we tend to focus on and to repeat over and over again the things that come easy to us and the things that make us feel good. Everyone needs a healthy dose of that. And if they're objectively mitzvot, then why not? You know, why not chaperein? It's like you're like at the buffet table, you're at the shmorg. You know, and you can, or, you know, I remember the first time I went to Grossinger's, and I remember asking my parents for breakfast, can I get pancakes or French toast? My mom said, both. That's the beauty of going to Grossinger's. That was like the one hotel, right? Now there's now Grossinger's is like, come on. Anyway, Olav Shalom. So, of course, if there's easy mitzvos, why not chaperein? Why not grab as many of them as possible? They are mitzvos. But you have to realize, you're not going to get sipuka nefesh from that. And you're not going to grow. Once, if it was always easy or now it's become easy, that's great. Put them in the bank. You're still getting points for it. You're still earning interest from it. You should keep on doing them. But you need to find at least one thing this year that's hard for you. That's a little bit of tension. It's a little bit difficult. If you can work on that, now again, there's a risk because maybe you'll fail. right? And maybe you shouldn't have gone out with that man or done that, whatever, because maybe he won't like you. Right? In life, right, you have to make yourself vulnerable for anything good to come in. If you want to never be hurt, you keep your heart closed. You'll never be hurt. You'll never love. You'll never have anything. Right? The safe way is not the smart way. Always. Sometimes, but not always. In order to grow, you have to allow yourself to be vulnerable and risk failure, risk being hurt. Right? We all have to be the proverbial guy in the relationship. You have to be the one who says, will you marry me? You have to be the one who says, I love you first. Now, hopefully she'll respond. Hopefully you'll put yourself out there. Hakadosh Baruch Hu will respond. He'll do something that's hard for you. And you'll get the payback because it'll be successful. Yes, there's a risk. Maybe you'll fail. But it's a risk worth taking. Because if we only do the things that already come easy to us, if we only do the things that we're already good at, then there's no growth, and then there's no satisfaction, and then there's no meaning in life. I wish everyone a Shana Tova, Sivuch Simba Tova, and a good Geben Shior.